Hello, 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 and welcome to Shedcast, the official podcast of the Edinburgh Fringe 2021. Elaine here. I hope you didn't miss me too much with Noreen. Sorry, Brian, throwing his two-pence piece in yesterday, but do not fear, I am here. Today I am at the Traverse Theatre in Edinburgh, and what a joy it is to be here. Apart from the wind, why is Edinburgh the most windy place that ever was? I stepped off the train this morning and I was like, ah, there it is, that bloody wind that never stops. The East Coast, eh? But for all my grumbling, I am Scottish, we love a grumble. I am undeniably in love with Edinburgh. There is something so magical about it, and I am feeling even more blessed to be here with the Edinburgh Fringe. Last night in the Shed, we had Love Letters to the Public Transport System by Molly Taylor, and I hope that if you're listening, it means that you watched it. My heart was well and truly warmed by Love Letters, and it really got me thinking. It got me thinking about the services that we take for granted. Bus drivers, train drivers, supermarket workers, the NHS, basically all of our key workers. For me, it was a thank you to all of them. A thank you way before we were clapping and banging pots on the doorstep. This is Molly Taylor's prelude to that moment in time. On the surface, it is a play about a woman wanting to find and thank the folk who work on the public transport system, but as an audience member, it had me going a bit deeper. We need each other, and everything is interdependent. No man is an island. Who was it that sang that? No man is an island. Who was that? Can't remember. But anyway, that was hope you enjoyed that. Love Letters was a gentle reminder to appreciate the small things in life, and that a little gratitude goes a long way. Hopefully you watched it and can take some of that gratitude and pass it on today. Now it's time for my guest of the day. It is Molly Taylor, and we are putting it together.
I'm not going to lie, it did feel a bit emotional. It's 9 years since I did this show at The Fringe. So it was 2012, the summer of 2012. And of course, coming back to Scotland, I've not been here. I've not been to Edinburgh for a couple of years. Obviously, COVID means that no one's been anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so it felt very, it felt quite cozy to be back. The first time I ever performed Love Letters, it was in this space.
Ah. Yeah.
So it's like a nice full circle to come back and be in Trav 2 and even better to be in the Shed. So actually, even though I'm not gonna lie, I was bricking it, I really enjoyed it.
So when you brought it to the Fringe, this was the venue?
No,
I was thinking that's a good first venue for the Fringe, isn't it?
Yes. No.
Who are you?
I am the Queen. I actually presented the show first in, it must have been maybe 2011, and it was part of a work in progress season that NTS were running. So NTS kind of commissioned a piece originally. I did one night here, I did one night at the Sitz. And it was the year later that basically I remounted it in, it's pretty much in its original form, and took it to the Fringe. But I was in the Assembly Rooms in George Square. I say gesturing towards George mm-hmm. Square. You can't see, viewer. So I was there. Yeah, I was there for 3 weeks. So no, I mean, you know, I had my one night at the Trav, and that was it. So, but even more special than to get a second night at the Trav.
Wonderful. And how did you get here today?
I actually got the train through from Glasgow, having come up via London, which is where I live now. So I went the kind of long way round to see my pals. Travelling by train is the only way I can get anywhere because I don't drive. So mm-hmm. it was particularly nice to be back on that Glasgow to Edinburgh train.
So Scotland, a bit of a home away from home.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, it is like my soul home. I went to uni in Glasgow and then ended up living here for about a decade, and love the country. I know it's a bit of a cliche, love the people. I'm a Scouser, and Scousers, and I lived in Glasgow, Scousers and Ouija's are like,
yes,
spiritually aligned as people. And yeah, I mean, I just feel like there's a lot of my experiences of being in Scotland, of like studying in Scotland and then beginning to make work in Scotland, are like steeped in meaning for me.
Mm-hmm.
So funnily enough, when the producer of Sheddenborough asked me to bring Love Letters to the Shed, she was like, well, we're filming it in London, Molly, and that's where you live. We're obviously filming in Edinburgh as well, but you won't want to go to Edinburgh. And I was like, yes, I'll go to Edinburgh, please.
I absolutely do. Great. What made you write Love Letters?
I think at the time when I had the germ of the idea, I thought the idea was only ever I'm going to find these transport workers. And I think in my daft brain, I thought I'll find them and then I will make a show with them.
Right. So it was they were kind of, they came hand in hand looking for the drivers and the show.
Absolutely, yeah. Brilliant. I mean, the show is only the show because the search to try and find these drivers like never really took off. And so I was writing the show as I was doing the research, and so the whole journey, I hate to be a cliche, but the journey of the piece is like me.
We are talking about public transport as well, so the word journey is kind of very topical.
Yeah, the piece would have been a very different piece had I found the drivers, I guess. And in the end, everything that's in the show happened, and it pretty much happened in the same order that it happened, even to the point where the final story, which is a personal story, I remember literally chatting to my mum, having just gone to interview a bus driver, and I was like, this guy's amazing, he's brilliant, this is definitely going to go in the show. And my mum was like, you know me and your dad met on the bus, Mull. And I was like, that's the ending. The ending of my show is written. So to be honest, the whole piecing it together was just really happenstance. And it was kind of, it was cobbled. And it remains in its cobbled state. And when I presented it as a work in progress, it was just me on a bus seat. And when I re-presented it at the Fringe, it was still me on a bus seat. And it's still me on a seat today. So like it hasn't really evolved from its very gentle beginning, I suppose, of being like a tiny little delicate storytelling show. It never got any bells and whistles. I thought there would be, you know, like pyros in it at one point, puppets, you know. And then when I was developing it at that point at the National Theatre of Scotland, they were like, no, it's just you in a seat, you don't need anything else. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh really, fuck, okay, I need something to distract, no, keep people awake, no. And they were like, no, it is what it is. And
yeah,
that's the show that people saw today.
And that is exactly what we seen today, and in many ways it's perfect for the Shed.
It is actually, yeah.
And actually, you've got your chair, it's just not a bus chair, it's a rather old looking kind of, I don't know, how would we describe that chair?
I think that's like someone's great aunt's chair that's been in the loft for a while. The best possible, and I mean that in like a positive way.
It'd be good to read a book in that chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were saying the personal story at the end. Do you think there's any sort of, I don't know, is serendipity the right word with the fact? Because did you know about your mum and dad meeting in that way somewhere in the back of your head?
Yes, I will have known, because it will have been it's like a famous fable in our family, because mum and dad married 3 weeks after they got together.
Wow.
So of course we've always been like, you're mental. So I will have known that on some level, I think subconsciously. But when I presented the idea to the National Theatre of Scotland and I was like, guys, I want to write a show about public transport and I want to find drivers who've taken me on important journeys, they were like, great. That's the kind of your opening gambit, and go away and play with it. And it was because it was only ever really meant to be a work in progress. I approached the writing of it kind of just going like, well, let's see what stories I find. So the fact that there was that germ of like my mum and my dad's origin story at the back, which just meant that there was a perfect full stop to it. And I think it did, like, I have to say, I mean, of course, the show is kind of about, like you say, serendipity and kind of like timing and kind of like stories like interweaving and your life sort of hinging on something changing. And with this particular show, there's been so many serendipitous moments. I mean, even this morning, being on the same train as you. yes. without us knowing.
That's so true. Because I could hear you chatting to the bus conductor on, and I was like, oh, kind of listen, eerie wigging in as I do. And I could hear you kind of chatting. And I was thinking, who is this lovely woman that's chatting to the bus driver and finding out what's going on? Then I got here and I was like, it's the lovely woman that's doing the play today.
It's that really chatty lass on public transport.
She actually does love public transport.
It's so funny because you were sitting opposite me. Because I spotted you as well, mm-hmm. and obviously didn't know it was you. And of course we're masked up.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was so funny, like bumping into you outside the trav, and you looked at my bag and you were like, were you on my train? And I was like, are you on my train?
And the reason that I noticed the bag was I was needing a backpack and I wanted that backpack and ended up with another one. So I was like, when I got on the train, I was like, oh, there's one of those backpacks that I wanted.
It's a really good backpack.
Beautiful backpack. So when was this at the Fringe?
So it was at the Fringe in 2012. Mm-hmm. Cast your mind back like 9 whole years.
That's a long time.
Which is a really long time. So actually I've got to say, when Francesca, the producer, suggested that I come to the Shed and bring the show, I was really thrilled to be asked. But I also had that sense of like, oh man, it's like getting out a diary from a long time ago and reading it aloud. And I thought, I'm too old to play this now. Like, I'm 10 years older than the girl in this show. And I was like, I can't, you know, soon. I will never, this, I have to just stop doing this show. I mean, I haven't done it for a couple of years. So it was a case of, I'll do it. I'm thrilled to do it. I'm desperate to come to Scotland. I'd love to be in the Shed. I really admire what Sheddenborough is as a creative kind of entity. But I also was like, oh, it's a bit embarrassing, isn't it? Doing that old thing again.
That's great. So do you feel that you've outgrown it?
Yes, I do. I do feel like I've outgrown it. I think I have a weird relationship with the show because it's the first thing that really I ever wrote and presented at any scale, at any level. And I think... And I had a good time with the show. Like, we had a really great time at the Fringe. Lots of people came to see it. That was amazing. The whole summer was just like Edinburgh was lit in that beautiful light that Edinburgh has. Like, I fell in love for that summer at the Fringe. Like, it was a kind of golden time. But I always felt a little bit embarrassed of the show because in that imposter syndrome kind of way, when you present something and you're not seasoned yet, and you feel, and it's personal, and it's all true. There's nothing fictional in it. In that way, it felt quite artless. Because I thought, like, I'm just chatting some stories about people that I've met, and it's all to do with buses and trains. It felt dead. It felt kind of easy and simple. I think I struggled with that. I just felt like it needs to be bolder. It needs to be... You know, I guess sometimes you judge your own work very harshly, don't you? And so even though I'm very fond of the show and I wouldn't be like where I am now in lots of respects without the show, it has had a massive impact on my life. It's got me to places, you know, like without bringing the show to Edinburgh in 2012, I wouldn't have met my fella. And so even though the show is a sort of catalogue of romantic disasters in my life up until that point, had I not written the show, I might not have met my man, Sam. Mm-hmm. And so I love the show. I love the bones of the show, but getting it out, it's like trying to squeeze into an old pair of jeans and you're like, ugh, they don't fit anymore. But you love them and you don't want to throw them away.
The show in many ways is a bus.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yes.
And that's kind of, that is the case with life, isn't it?
Yeah.
We don't realise it at the time, but every new moment, every new person, every new city, every new experience is a little, it takes you another, it turns you another corner or opens another door. And because I think we feel that our life is stagnant sometimes, especially in our feelings. And if we're feeling a certain way, we think we're going to feel that way forever.
Yeah.
But actually life is constantly moving
and changing and evolving, and and actually without those sorts of people who make our life smooth or carry us or take us from one place to another. I mean, of course my show is about public transport, but in the last 18 months we've completely reframed what like those, now we would call them key workers, or we'd call them frontline workers. You're talking about like the services that basically keep us afloat. We have a renewed, I think, appreciation of, you know, the fact that we are, none of us can just coexist in isolation. Like, we can't, we need each other. And certainly for me, everything I do relies on someone else turning up to work and either, you know, driving that train or driving that bus or that tram, and getting and you know, allowing my life to just kind of unfold in a way. So I can't do anything that I do without those people. And I know it's not a selfish act because it's their job and they're getting paid for it, but it is a, it is also a beautiful act in lots of ways.
I think, you know, you're saying you're that imposter syndrome and you're maybe a wee bit embarrassed by the show. I find that quite interesting because I think it's such an intelligent idea. So simple. And I don't think many people would see it. I don't, I'm trying to think of other things that I have, that I have seen like it. And I can't really think of anything. Because you are, you were foreseeing, almost foreseeing the key worker situation. You could see that.
Yeah.
That these people were so important.
Yes.
Whereas the rest, not everyone, but you just think, oh, that's, they're bus drivers. But now that I've watched that, I've got, I kind of, I'll be going home on the train and being like, yeah, there's somebody getting me from A to B.
Yeah.
Loads of people.
And actually, that was the thing that I suppose was really encouraging when I first presented the show, is that a lot of the response I had from people who, some of whom I knew, some of whom I didn't, was that they were, they felt a bit touched or a bit kind of, I don't know, enlivened. Or I remember someone coming up to me after the show and they said, I feel different. And it was probably like the best compliment I could ever be given, because, you know, 52 minutes of just one person chatting, it maybe just shifted a perspective. And even if that shift doesn't last for longer than an hour, it's still, it's still what theatre is there to do, right? It's just like, ideally you want to leave the theatre a little bit more, I don't know, alive.
Grateful.
Or, yeah.
And I think Love Letters does remind you to be grateful for the simple things, and that we're all interconnected in so many ways. I was actually saying just now, I'm working from home just now, as are lots of people. And see, for the past maybe few weeks, I've been having to come to work, to come here to speak to people like yourself. And just getting up and getting ready and going outside and seeing people and being on the train and clocking people like yourself on the train, and that's not lost on me how important that is. And that's what that, that's what Love Letters, I think, tells you or reminds you to look around and be grateful.
I hope so. I hope so. If I, if that, if anyone is to take anything from it, it would be lovely if the next time they get on a, do you know what's funny, I was going to say the next time I get on the bus, they kind of like go, ah, oh, cheers. Like, thank you. And thank you in a meaningful way.
Thanks, driver.
Thanks, driver.
I love it.
I when we did the show originally at The Fringe, we had these badges, hashtag thank you, driver.
Brilliant.
I've still, I think my ma's got one on her fridge. And one of my mates who came to see the show, I think I did in like a night in, it went down to the Royal Court in London just for one night when Vicky Featherstone, who'd been leading NTS, went down to the Royal Court, and she did this night call surprise theatre, and invited the show to be part of it. So people didn't know what they were coming to see. And then the curtains, you know, parted, and it was me in a bus seat. And actually, because they didn't know what they were going to see, I got a really genuine reaction, because there was no marketing, there was no copy, there was no image. There was, people were like, okay, what's the show? And loads of people, they really enjoyed it, because it's a, you know, it's a warm show, and it is intended to uplift. And one of my mates came to see it, and she took a badge, a thank you, driver. And then a couple of weeks later, she is pissed in London. She, and this is before like you could use your cards to get on the bus, and she was like hammered, she had no money, she was like, I can't get home. And she got onto the bus, she had the badge, thank you, driver, on the, and she got on the bus, and she was like, listen, fella, I don't have an ice card, I don't have any cash, but I need to get home. And he saw the badge and he was like, all right, you can get on. And so she texted me being like, I got on the bus, Molly, with your badge. And I was like, that's perfect. I'm thrilled with that.
I loved your reference in the show to the Central Way of Scotland, how Thank You Driver is just kind of universal.
Yes, as it should
Thanks,
be.
Thanks, driver.
Yes. But do you know what? In other places, like, they don't, you don't, I mean, yeah, you might say thank you, but like the fact that you embolden your driver and you name who they are, they have driven you. Like, they are important. And it's the same with train drivers, isn't it? You never really get to thank them either, because they're at the front of the train and you might get off somewhere where they're not getting off. But yeah, like, thank you driver is like, it's typical Scottish elegance. Do you know what I mean? Just like, you do it right up here.
Ah, that's nice to hear. I love that. I loved your, as well, the reference about the north and the south. I was like this, shaking my head like, yes, that is so true. You know, it's made me think almost of like, this sounds bizarre, but almost like an ant farm. You know, and they are like, everybody's, that's, you know, everybody keeps all the little ants, keep each other afloat. And
yeah, we rely on each other. We rely on each other all the time. And also we do take those services for granted. I mean, you know, don't you, as soon as like the snow falls, or the trains are buggered and everyone is like, oh my God. And you're like, well, yeah, like every day that these systems exist. I mean, we're so lucky, aren't we, in this country? We've got like an epic rail system that's been going for hundreds of years. It still goes, you know, you can get to like the furthest, longest place. But I think culturally, we just think that public transport just exists to serve us. And we just hate on it when it goes wrong. And we don't think to stop and go, thank God for you. Thank God, you know, we can live our lives like this.
I don't know if that's a very Brit. I don't know if it's like that in other countries, but maybe a very British thing. No. Unfortunately,
no, it's not.
Is it like that in other places as well?
I don't know. It's funny actually, because I did this show in Adelaide a couple of years ago at the Adelaide Fringe. I kind of dusted off the show out of retirement. And took it to Australia, and I was thinking, I don't know if this is going to connect here, because I don't know what, you know, like, Australia is like a huge country, right? And of course, like, their transport network can't connect them all because of the scale of the landmass. And actually, in Adelaide particularly, they are really, really damning about their public transport system. Like, they hate on it. And so they just were totally tickled by this little British lass turning up on her bus seat being like, aren't the buses amazing? They were just like, what? But even with that sort of like cultural difference, loads of people still took something away from the show and still, I think, I hope, enjoyed it. In fact, you know what? Something really funny happened when I was in Adelaide. It's the same serendipity that we talked about, you and I being on the same train this morning without us knowing. One of the bus drivers that I met when I was writing the show was a guy called Barry. He lived in Bury. A family friend put me in touch with him. When I couldn't find my bus drivers and train drivers, I was like, just, does anyone know anyone I can talk to? And then I met Barry, and his story ends up briefly in the show. I performed it in 2018 in Adelaide, this show. So 6 years after I'd performed it in Edinburgh. I know that since Barry passed away, I take the show to Adelaide, I perform it, I go into the bar afterwards, and there's a couple there, and they're from Bury, and this guy says, I am Barry's brother. He'd emigrated to Australia like 25 years ago. They'd picked the show at random, Elaine, I'm not being funny, and they'd come to see it. And I was just like, my brain was exploding. I was like, are you kidding me? Again, it's like,
that's
how
amazing.
Like, all those little decisions like that had got him into that theatre to hear me talk about his now dead brother. I was just like, this is bonkers. That was like the final little gift I got from Love Letters. I was like, okay, that's great. I never need to do the show again.
And did he know that the Barry you were talking about in the show was his brother?
Yeah. He was like, oh my goodness me, again.
So did they come up to you at the end?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. They were just like, they were totally giddy. They were just like, what are the chances? You know, they flick through the Fringe brochure and they go, we'll see that and that and that. They didn't live in Adelaide. They had to travel in to come and see the show. So they were just like, yeah, they were thrilled. And I was thrilled. I was like, yeah, this is gold.
That is beautiful.
Yes.
What an incredible story that is. And what are you most looking forward to?
In terms of life now?
Yeah. Career or just whatever you...
I feel, funnily enough, like what happens next for me is feels quite unknown at the moment. But I think that's because in the time that COVID has sort of raged, had a little baby.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And because those two things have happened concurrently, a pandemic and parenthood, I feel strangely, I don't know where my creative self is at, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what to say, what I want to say. It's kind of part of the reason why I was so thrilled to be asked to do this, even though I, like I say, I feel like Love Letters is like my embarrassing little sister and I just want to ignore her sometimes. I was like, oh, well, this is going to, like, I'll have to perform it, I'll have to bring it, I'll have to love it again. Mm-hmm. I have to get back to myself again. So I don't know whether this, even just being here, will kickstart me to kind of think about what I might make and write next. But yeah, I think what I'm most looking forward to is being able to just move more freely than we've been able to, for people who've never met my little one, to meet mm-hmm. her. And that's the great thing about coming up to Scotland, is I'm seeing friends tonight who I've not seen for years, and that's going to be really emotional, I think. Mm-hmm. And I guess just waiting until whatever this creative block is just lifts. And at the moment, I'm just trying to sit in that place of being a bit blocked and being like, okay, that's where you're at. You know, sometimes you can't change it and you can't force it. You just have to go, okay, I don't know what Molly is going to come up with next. I hope it's not a pile of crap. It might be. So yeah, in answer to that question, Elaine, I think I don't yet know what I'm most looking forward to.
And isn't that exciting?
I suppose so, yeah.
Thank you very much for chatting to me, Molly.
You're welcome. Lovely to meet you.
You too. Great stuff. I love how Molly has had so many serendipitous moments with this show, like meeting Brian's brother, the woman whose ex-fiance proposed to her in the White Horse, and of course being on the same train as me on the way to Edinburgh today. If that doesn't highlight the interconnectedness of all things in the universe, I don't know what will. If you are looking for tickets for tonight's performance of Bottleneck by Luke Barnes, get on to shedinburgh.com and get them on there. You can also donate to the Shed Load of Future Fund on there. So get on and share the wealth, folks. That's it for another episode of Shedcast, brought to you by Putting It Together. Cheerio!